Okay, so can you give me a little bit introduction of yourself, like, and what do you do?
So my name's Chris Johnson, and I volunteer at two prisons, teach Buddhism and meditation. So Buddhism as in I teach the philosophical aspects of Buddhism and meditation. So the idea is that there's kind of an informed practice, not just sitting with no background. So myself and my colleagues, we go in to provide philosophical, structural, psychological background and tools to work in conjunction with the meditation practice. And I got my start doing that through Dihong. I met Dihong and John Fries. They introduced me to their program, and I've been looking for a way to do that. And so it was a very fortunate happenstance. The ability to do that inspired me, and I came across some articles or story. I can't remember, it was so many years ago now, about somebody who had taught meditation in prison. And at the time, I thought, you can do that? Like, that's an option for people? And I read the story, and it's a very emotional story because the guys were explaining their experience and how they were touched and changed and saw things differently. And it really opened my eyes, and I said, oh, wow, I have to investigate this. And so I, set my sights on that direction, and came across those two individuals.
Thank you so much. Yeah, even I got to know about, like, I was very shocked to know, like, oh, you can teach about meditation inside the prison. I got to know, in fact, while I was doing a month Camino walk, and where I met, like, one of the guy who was doing this Camino, and he was, like, in past, like, he was is a prisoner kind of for some kind of crime, but then he said, like, now he was working as a mentor, like, inside the prison. So that's how I got to know, like, oh, he can, like, he can teach you meditation and yoga and all that stuff. So I was, like, very shocked too. And that kind of made me, and there was some series and some research that I was reading and all, and that really makes me feel like I really want to be there. Yeah, perfect. Okay, so my next question is, can you give me a brief definition of mindfulness meditation in your own word? Like, what do you think, what is mindfulness meditation is according to you?
Loaded question. So I think in the way that I like to approach it, because in some ways, mindfulness meditation is almost a meaningless term. It's thrown around so wildly that there's no kind of real structure to it or definition to it. That so for me, I look at it as a very open approach to teaching or to meditation practice. Something that instills within somebody the power to bring up a certain calmness about them, to allow ease to develop in somebody's life, to create a space for this kind of ease to grow in somebody's life. Because if they're stressed out or whatever, their life is very constricted, and people often feel trapped by stress and whatever it is. And so if you can provide a space for this ease and calmness to grow within somebody, that's the approach that I take. And hopefully it also instills some sort of a support, value structure support that they can lean upon, as well. So technique is a whole nother thing. So, there's many techniques, but that's the core at what I try to get to when I teach it.
My next question is, like, when you go to the prison about teaching mindfulness meditation, like, which technique, like, do you use? Like, do you use body scanning, or do you use, like, mantras, like, you know? Or do you use just, like, focusing on breathing? Like, what type of meditation do you kind of work on with?
Yeah, great follow-up. I use a variety of techniques.
Okay.
So for most of the time, I see the groups that I work with maybe once a month, sometimes twice a month. So I come in there and I don't want to give them the same dinner every time.
Okay.
Otherwise,
they can
practice counting. Right. If that's the technique I bring them, they can do that on their own. So I like to give them a toolbox rather than one tool.
Right.
So I will try to anchor. I usually anchor somewhere around breath meditation. But I like to bring in a variety of approaches. So sometimes we do body scans. Sometimes element meditation. Breath manipulation. Sometimes noting techniques.
Okay.
So I try to expose people, because I work with groups at a time. It's very rarely one-on-one. So not everybody can use the same technique.
Right.
So I feel like I'm not doing justice or service if I come in and just, this is the way it has to be, teach it this way each time. So I try to expose them to what they can. And if I'm sitting with a group of experienced people, we may just sit in silence because they can all work the way they want to work on something. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Okay. My next question. Do you think teaching inmates about mindfulness meditation allow space for them to consider themselves as a part of the human community? Because usually they've been always seen like, okay, you're not part of this community since, you know, you made a crime. Even though when they come out of that zone, like, you know, there have been still this kind of impact like people have on them. So do you think when you teach them about this meditation and all, they find a space for themselves and like they feel that they are part of the community? Since like, because teaching like, when once they learn mindfulness meditation, like, you know, it doesn't bother that much when somebody says something to you, because you're just thinking about your own space and what you're. So what is your take on that?
Absolutely. I do think I see that reflected often. I wouldn't say it's blanket that it happens to everybody, especially at the same rate. But I've witnessed people able to get out of their mental prisons. Able to, you know, in other words, or maybe come out of their shell in a way and be able to relate to the group of people that were sitting in at the time.
Right.
Or reflect back to me their experiences in the prison life larger. Or begin to think about the people outside of the prison whose lives they impacted.
Right.
Or the plans they have when they get back out and how they want to connect with those communities. So I've seen that kind of sprout within people and grow over time. And I think that meditation is probably the tool that allows a lot of that transformation, because there's a lot of psychological stuff you can read. But unless you actually give yourself a practice to kind of water that seed, you know, let it grow within you, it's just, you know, reading. So I think that's a powerful tool to enable that process.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. How do the prisoner respond to the mindfulness meditation? Do they continue practicing meditation after the course, or do you think they don't?
It's a mixed basket.
Okay.
some people come to me specifically for meditation.
Oh.
And that's their thing, and they are very dedicated, and they'll be meditating 4 or 5 hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and they start telling me about all their, you know, they start advancing into some really interesting territory.
Definitely.
But then I have other people who they just want to come and express devotion to the Buddha. And
right.
They don't really care about the meditation. They'll do it,
mm-hmm.
but they're probably not doing it outside of the group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a mixed bunch. And you have to, or I have to be able to provide service to all of that.
Okay.
So as I try to work with that range of people, and sometimes it tends to focus more in one area than in the other. But I would say, by and large, most of the people are interested in meditation, and that's their primary interest, the majority of people.
Perfect. Okay. Do you have any stories of inmate that you can share? Like, how does he or she incorporates with mindfulness meditation in their daily life?
Yeah, I ask people to tell me this. So they'll wake up before everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Prison life is very structured.
Right.
And the places where I serve, they live in dormitories, so
mm-hmm.
they don't have a little cell to themselves or with one other person. They live in
a giant bunch of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's loud, it's noisy, there's no privacy,
yeah.
you know, so it's not the ideal meditation space. So they tell me stories like, okay, they have to get strategic. I
mm-hmm.
wake up half an hour before everybody else, so I have half an hour to sit on my bunk
mm-hmm.
in quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they do head count, that's another time where I can steal some time away for meditation.
Mm.
And then a lot of them do like to do a kind of casual walking meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So they can just walk around the yard in a contemplative manner.
Mm-hmm.
So I found them telling me how they strategically can fit meditation in their day. You can imagine if somebody's on their bunk like this all the time. The names they might get called or teased, and they do, and some of them, they don't care, and some of
mm-hmm.
them, you know, they do. Or, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, what are some misconceptions we might have about prisoners, like as outsider? What do you think? What
mm-hmm.
are the misconceptions we might have? Like, since you kind of work there, like, you know, what are the differences that you can see that we can't see, like, as an outsider,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. Just my own. I can think about just my own perceptions
mm-hmm.
and how they've changed.
Mm-hmm.
I probably thought that I envisioned most people as being hardened criminals,
mm-hmm.
you know, just really rough and tough. And yes, that exists, and there are
mm-hmm.
those people, but the majority of the people had an accident, a lapse of judgment,
mm-hmm.
a bad decision here and there, and they are just like everybody else.
Right.
They may have some disadvantages in their life that
mm-hmm.
let them get there, you know, lack of opportunity and structure, you know, social issues that didn't provide social, you know, safety nets and opportunities for them. But by and large, they're just kind of like everybody else. It's not the Hollywood version of prison life that we always see portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, I find that they are extremely reflective.
Mm-hmm.
They have a high level of emotional intelligence and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to have deep level of conversation you know, pretty much when first meeting them very often. And they are able to let their guard down
mm-hmm.
and have this interaction, which I don't even have with my friends very often.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
But in there, they're mm-hmm. just kind of have this open up honesty.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some dishonest communications, but
mm-hmm.
for the most part, I find that to be a surprise
mm-hmm.
to me. I wasn't sure I was expecting that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. How long you have been volunteering with this prison project? Like,
I think this is going on 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah.
Okay. And what are your like work experience? How do you like working in there?
I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it. It can be taxing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Physically taxing. The long days can be a little rough. Mm-hmm. I start at 3 a.m. and don't get back home until 8 or 9. Wow. So it's a very long day. Lots of driving. So that aspect is hard. But almost every time I walk away from the prison at the end of the day, just feeling emotionally uplifted.
Hmm.
Yeah. There's been occasions where something has happened in the prison, or there's been a hard day where it can be like, feel like you get a punch in the gut feeling, and those are rare. The majority of the time, it feels pretty good.
Okay. What benefits do you experience from teaching meditation? Like for your own self, like as you're teaching them?
I have to learn it really well to teach it. It keeps me honest in that, well, if I'm gonna go over there and do that, I have to put in the work myself. You know, I have to be able to show up for them and not feel, you know, if I'm not doing the work on the outside, then when I go inside and do anything, it doesn't feel genuine. So it keeps me honest in that respect. And I think I've learned a lot about just interaction, you know, with these people, this population. And I had some, you know, discussions with the men over time, and they told me that I'm distilling a few conversations that I've had that are very memorable.
Right.
That they don't have role models.
Okay.
Real life role models.
Okay.
And so, and especially some people who've gone in when they may be 16 years old or something like that, they've grown up
right.
in the prison.
Oh, okay.
And they don't have anybody that they, that models just a good behavior to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was expressed to me how important that is. And when they see that in me, just how important that is to them. So it makes me be a better person. It makes me want to do a better job all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me want to improve so that I can show up and I can be there and I can be there for them in whatever capacity that, that they need that.
Is it okay I ask you a few more questions?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Do you think mindfulness meditation and yoga goes hand in hand, or what are your takes on that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Personally, yes. I had a very good yoga practice, and it's slid a little bit.
Okay.
I can tell you just personally, my own personal experience is if I am able to maintain both, they both benefit dramatically. I can see the benefits of yoga show up in my sitting meditations.
Right.
And I can see the power of the mindfulness while I'm doing the asanas or something. And so I can see both reflected in one another. In the prison, you know, I don't teach yoga. That's not why I go there. So I feel it's not, you know, it's not under my job description.
Right.
So I really feel like I can't do it. I encourage it. And I try to tell them the benefits. And some of the guys, they go for it.
All right.
And so I can have some, you know, put in some yoga here and there, or mm-hmm. show some physical techniques that might help with their sitting practice, or even yoga philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some bleed through in my experience that way. And like I said, I helped get a yoga program started mm-hmm. at Taft Prison.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think they just work together so well.
Okay. Supposedly, it's a condition question.
Sure.
Suppose an inmate come to you and says, like, they want to practice mindfulness, meditation, yoga, whatever, like, you know, but for them it's kind of very hard to even, like, sit or even to go on the mat, like, you know. What advice will you give them to start, just to start?
It would be to find something completely unrelated to a formal practice
mm-hmm.
that they can try.
Okay.
So,
okay, basically, so do you want to give me a little bit introduction about yourself, like your name and...
Yeah. So I'm a second year MDiv student in Buddhist chaplaincy, but I have work experience prior to starting here
mm-hmm.
of working in various nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
I think the particular one relevant for your research is for nonprofit teaching mindfulness meditation in juvenile incarceration facilities.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so can you tell me a little bit, like, give a brief definition of mindfulness meditation in your own words? What do you think about it?
So the basic teaching would be mindfulness of the breath, and then mindfulness of feeling tone
mm-hmm.
within the body,
mm-hmm.
and then mindfulness of six senses, perceptions. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, perfect.
When I'm teaching the youth, mm-hmm. I keep it as basic as possible.
Okay.
As simple as possible.
Perfect. So, like, you use just the basic one, like focusing on your breath or that kind of one, not like
breath,
like,
is the foundation. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
So how long you've been volunteering with this prison project?
I should say, though, it's in the juvenile camp system.
Okay.
So juveniles are sentenced to 5 to 7 or 7 to 9 months.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the time length. So either way, though, it is being incarcerated. Yeah, it's the same.
Okay.
And I would maybe also venture to say that when someone is 14, 15, 16,
mm-hmm.
that 9 months can feel quite long. Maybe
mm-hmm.
their perception of that time is longer. It's more devastating for someone that young
mm-hmm.
to be incarcerated for that,
right.
Yeah, for that timeline.
Okay. Like, can you tell me something more about your work experience? Like, when you go there, like, you know, you work with them, what do you feel about it? Like, you know, what is the motivation behind, like, you know, working in there?
Yeah, sure. I would say that meditation is what we do, but providing a secure space for them, because after, let's say there's an hour meeting, then meditation would be about 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
to 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second half of the class or meeting time,
mm-hmm.
it's when they can share their feelings or the experiences over the week, if we're meeting weekly, right?
Right.
So I would say that simply providing a secure space with confidential understanding of what is discussed,
mm-hmm.
that can be as beneficial as well.
Perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
This is this can consider be, so I'm not only facilitating meditation,
mm-hmm.
I'm facilitating group
okay
as well.
Okay, perfect. So while you teach meditation, like, you know, did you get any response from the student, like, okay, how they are liking the meditation program and how is like, you know, benefiting them or anything like that?
Yes, of course. I think the proof, I guess, of the benefit is that some of the students remain in contact
right
once they're released, and and I can help refer them to reentry services.
Right.
There's a bond of trust, if you will, that's developed between facilitator
and the person.
Student or caretaker.
So do you think, like, personally, when you teach meditation, like, you know, you get kind of some kind of benefit, like how you share, like, one thing, you feel that bonding and, like, you know, there's some bonding, you can fix it. But at the same time, do you feel any personal benefits that is, like, you know, for yourself while you teach the meditation and all?
Sure. It's service work can be understood as something that's quite an esteemable act. It's a good use of one's time, giving back, as they say, right? Or helping those that are underprivileged, or what have you. But I should say, this is where it ventures into the personal. My karma has brought me here because I was like them as well, right?
Okay.
Yeah, having grown up in LA and experienced what they experienced when I was younger.
Okay.
So for me, it's not so much, it's not like I chose to work with this population. It's not really that way, right?
Okay.
More like the karma decided,
if
that makes sense.
Okay, definitely. Okay. Also, I was wondering, like, you know, how you, like, people, like, we've been reading and all that stuff versus meditation and yoga goes hand in hand.
Sure.
Do you believe in that? Like meditation is also about, like, focusing on your breathing and all that stuff. Do you think, like, even yoga, if they practice yoga inside, like, does that help? Or do you think these two things goes together hand in hand?
Sure. I think overall in a well-designed, I taught a meditation, mindfulness meditation course at an incarceration facility in Los Angeles, and it was 10 modules, so it was roughly a 10-week course.
Okay.
And I felt it quite skillful to introduce them to a variety of practices,
right,
including yoga. So one day would be, or a few days would be on mindfulness of the breath,
right.
And then it would be yoga or walking meditation or lying down meditation.
Yeah, the body scanning. And
body
all.
Scan,
yeah.
right.
Okay,
it's good to incorporate a variety of technique.
Okay, perfect.
It's great.
Okay, the last question.
And then yoga. No, it's fine. Sorry. You can ask them anyone.
Okay.
Yoga also the incorporating movement is wonderful. I found.
Yeah.
Plus, yoga has to its benefit quite a popularity.
Right. Yeah.
To it as well.
Yeah, the movement itself gave that. Like, that's what I've been reading so far. Like, the yoga movement itself helps them to, like, calm down and to see the watch, the breath, and everything. So.
And participation is key. Yoga can be quite fun. So it's good to,
Perfect. Yeah. Do you have any stories from inmate that you can share, or he or she, how she incorporates with mindfulness meditation in a daily life? Like, how do they practice? Like, once you're done teaching and all, like, after some time, like, do they continue practicing? Or, like, when they practice, do they face any kind of problem? Like, anything, anybody share with you?
Sure, I will. Yesterday, these are for juveniles for reentry that are trying to finish high school, that have formerly been incarcerated or been on probation or have been kicked out of traditional high schools. So we led a holy water blessing for a facility.
Mm-hmm.
And there are about maybe 30 students there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, one of the students, she, for our blessing, we chanted the Heart Sutra.
Heart Sutra, okay. Yeah.
And I had a translation of the Heart Sutra, and that provided for the students.
Mm.
And one of the students, she's very young. Young in age, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps older in spirit. Yeah.
Great.
She approached me afterwards, and after having heard the chant, she became quite interested.
Mm.
And in her own words, she was able to summarize the Heart Sutra.
Right.
So I found, I was quite moved that she was able to do that.
Mm.
Right.
That's great.
So this, there's a notion of planting seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I find to be the purpose. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that my job is to, my job is to introduce them to meditation,
mm-hmm.
not to make them become meditators.
Right.
I find that to be different.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
So, okay. Yeah.
Okay. What are the, some misconception we might have about prisoners? Like, you know, people who definitely, like, you know, the outsider, basically. I mean to say, like, what are the misconception, like, people can have about the prisoners? Like, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think the Buddha said not to see the person but the conditions.
Right.
So even the very label of prisoner,
mm-hmm.
or inmate or felon or gangbanger, they have a certain, they might have a certain relative usage, but beyond that it means not much. And for instance, Father Greg Boyle is the mm-hmm. founder of Homeboy Industries.
Right.
He says in the however many long, I think 30 years or so,
mm-hmm.
he says in the 30 years, I might be incorrectly quoting the time, but anyway, in the amount of time that he's worked in with these groups of people,
yeah.
he hasn't met a single bad person.
Mm,
right?
Right.
Well, instead, what he's encountered is mental health mm-hmm. disabilities or disorders, developmental disabilities or disorders, severe trauma,
definitely.
Horrific childhoods, right?
Definitely.
That's what he's seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is the work that I see. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, those that are incarcerated are within a system that continually tells them,
mm-hmm.
feeds a certain narrative,
mm-hmm.
and they begin to take on that narrative as truth.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And working with that and trying to maybe understand and bring compassion to that conditioning
mm-hmm.
is also the work.
I see.
Meaning the inmate might believe that she or he is a lowlife.
Right.
Is a menace to society,
mm-hmm.
can never recover,
definitely.
Has no chances. Mm-hmm. And meeting that with compassion, love, and kindness, right? And understanding as
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that and refusing to treat the person how they believe
mm-hmm.
they should be treated. Does that make sense?
That definitely makes
sense. So,
yeah, because as a human, we always want to judge on based on what happened, like, instead of looking like, there are situations, like, because I was reading some articles and all, and it says the same thing what you just mentioned.
That's
like,
right.
Like, you know, the bad childhood and what the, there are other stuff behind the story which we never try to go reach out to that point and try
mm-hmm.
to see that
mm-hmm.
and we just judge based on what crime they have made, but we never think about on the part of like, why did they do that, you know, like
right.
you know, so
that's
that
right.
definitely makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, to give you one small example,
uh-huh.
like we're talking about is I had one student. Her favorite thing to eat,
mm-hmm.
they are not provided good food, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her favorite thing to eat were these protein peanut butter cookies.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That was her favorite thing to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a big deal to, at least for me, to provide it for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a while for her to understand that she didn't need to earn this cookie.
Mm.
She didn't need to meditate first, and then I'd award her with it.
Right.
So even this small gesture of giving her a snack, mm-hmm. she didn't need to earn it. It's something she already deserved.
Yeah, definitely.
So that is one example.
Mm-hmm.
And then the correctional officer would try to tell her that she's being spoiled by receiving this, right?
So which is like a wrong thought puts in their mind,
which is
not, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like she deserves to have this just for being her, not
definitely.
Because she performed well or mm-hmm. what have you. Right? Of course, her participation is greatly appreciated,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what it's about.
Right. Definitely.
To give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say that meditation is a piece,
mm-hmm.
but it takes a lot. It takes a village, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it's a cooperative effort. I don't see, even as an instructor, meditation as this panacea
mm-hmm.
to as a form of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I find it in conjunction with the care of a social worker, with mental health if needed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Mentorship, reentry services. It kind of takes all of this in cooperation
right.
to maybe, to use a clinical term, produce someone well recovered from so if that makes
thank you. Okay, so my next question is, do you think teaching inmates about mindfulness meditation allows space for them to consider themselves as a part of the human community? Because like, you know, about what we were just talking about, like the way people give them this idea that you've been doing that and you don't deserve this and all, but like once they come into this practice and all, do you think like they feel like a community, that they are part of the community, they are accepted, they are loved, you know, no matter what is it, whatever happened?
Sure.
Like, do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think kinship
mm-hmm.
is critical to for. As a benefit, mm-hmm. as we are creating mini sanghas
mm-hmm.
when we form these meditation groups.
Right.
So yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a very important piece. And I would say that if I'm working with them, these youth, mm-hmm. many of whom are gang members,
mm-hmm.
it's not about. So I hear a lot is. Many of them will say, they've been conditioned to say, I'm staying out of trouble.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. But abstinence from whatever behavior or lifestyle is only one piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much about no longer being part of a gang,
mm-hmm.
but what about, what will fill the void then?
Mm-hmm.
So of course, if we want, it seems only fair if we hope for someone to leave a community,
mm-hmm.
then must also provide the community that they will be going to
right.
as well, right?
Definitely, yeah.
So
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and then also there, I think there were also research that indicated a temporary mentor, no matter how helpful,
mm-hmm.
is worse than having no mentor at all.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
The abrupt kind of, the abrupt... The abrupt termination of the relationship can issues of abandonment and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a continuing relationship, right? So
mm-hmm.
nonprofits that I'm with is considered a wraparound service.
Okay.
So we start with, let's say I'm a meditation instructor inside,
right.
but once they're out, the relationship continues.
Uh-huh, definitely, yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, what keeps you motivated to continue this work?
I believe in something called recovery-based service,
uh-huh.
not service-based recovery.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't base my own personal wellness
mm-hmm.
on my capacity to be mm-hmm. of service to them.
Mm-hmm.
I participate in my own sangha. I participate in my own. I have my own mentor,
right?
Who I'm very close with,
mm-hmm.
in my own family, right?
Definitely.
It's like if we expect them to this is a very one of the first gang very common gang saying is early on is never send someone to do something mm-hmm. you're not willing to do yourself.
Right.
But definitely. That still applies in a certain way, mm-hmm. said in a more maybe kind and soft way. Mm-hmm. But basically, if I'm going to have them, if I'm going to encourage them to take on certain practices
right.
as a lifestyle, mm-hmm. then I would find it hypocritical to not also do that myself.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That answers your question.
Definitely. Yeah. Do you want to add something or like?
No, it's all right if you have any more questions or anything.
I think I'm good on the questions.
Sure.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we got through that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Can I have a little bit introduction about yourself and what do you do?
Okay. Well, my name is Di Hong. I am a Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. I have an MA and PhD in Buddhist studies. I graduated in 2015 officially. Mm-hmm. And I have been volunteering in California State Prison since 2013. I've been in at least 7 of the prisons on a monthly basis. Okay. And
perfect. Yeah. Thank you. Can you give a brief definition of mindfulness meditation in your own word? What do you think what it is?
Mindfulness meditation is a practice that allows that helps a person to be able to recognize the issues that are going on in the mind. Mm-hmm. Or that are related to the feelings, to the emotions, mm-hmm. through sitting, through the practice of mindfulness. And mindfulness, by definition, is the ability, the act of paying attention at a particular object without judging, without making comments.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. How long have you been volunteering with this prison project?
Since summer of 2013, so it has been more than 6 years.
Oh, that's a long mm-hmm. time. Okay. What are some misconceptions we might have about prisoners or the prison life, like as an outsider?
Most people outside the prison think that the prisoners have nothing to do, that they are violent, that they deserve to be punished. That seems to be the misconception. Those are the issues that the public seem to be thinking about.
Okay, which is wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think? What is like the as you work inside? What do you think? What is different than what other people think outside?
When inside the prisons, as I work with the folks who come to the meditation group, mm-hmm. Almost everyone is busy. They have class to take, mm-hmm. meaning if they don't finish high school, they have to finish their GED, and that's a requirement.
Right.
Then for some of them, they can also take college courses through correspondence. Mm. But lately, there are certain prisons that have professors come in, you know, to teach face to face. And then they also have to do work, mm-hmm. meaning they have to clean up, they have to cook, they have to do laundry. They have assignments that do all of this. Right. And they get paid very minimum from 13 cents to 40 cents or 50 cents. Correct. And also, 55% of their pay it goes to restitution to the victims.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. So they literally get nothing. And then they also have to take self-help classes, mm-hmm. meaning that they have to take classes such as alternative to violence. Mm. They have to take AA classes, NA. Mm-hmm. Then they also have to take vocational training, meaning job training skills. that when they get out, that those skills can help them to find work.
Okay. What motivates you to work for this prison project?
My thinking was to give back to this society because I went to college for free.
Okay.
I had a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering. I have a Master in Electrical Engineering. I have an MBA, and most of them are free. I also have an MA, like I said earlier, an MA and PhD in Buddhist study, and they're all free. Mm. So my thinking at the beginning was just to give back to this society. And once I got in, when I noticed the suffering that the prisoners, you know, go through, it gives me the motivation to help them to deal with their suffering. Mm-hmm. And also because the majority of them were abused or traumatized at home,
mm-hmm.
or in school, you know, then I read a lot just so that I can offer them different techniques to help them deal with the issues.
Okay. Do you think teaching inmates about mindfulness meditation allows space for them to consider themselves as a part of the human community? Because, you know, like...
Well, it's... I don't just teach mindfulness meditation. I also teach... I also offer some of the Buddha's teaching.
Right.
Which is the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Three Marks of Existence, the Five Aggregates, along with the mindfulness meditation. All together allow them to recognize what's going on in their mind, or okay. what caused them suffering and right. the source of the suffering.
Okay.
And it allows them to feel, to recognize that they're still human and that they deserve to be forgiven, that and they also feel a sense of community, a connection with everyone around them.
Thank you. As there are many different ways to practice mindfulness meditation, which practice do you use with inmates in prison? Like particular, like any, like there are different kind of sitting, walking meditation, body scanning. Which Correct. One do you use?
Well, we usually do sitting most of the time. Okay. And if we have a day-long meditation, which right. is from 9 o'clock in the morning until 8 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
then that's when we, you know, switch between sitting, walking.
Right.
And as we do sitting,
perfect. So, okay, to start, can you give me a little bit of introduction of about yourself and about your work and mm-hmm. what you've been doing?
So my name is Tom Moritz. I'm an adjunct professor in psychology, divinity, and liberal arts here at University of the West. Mm-hmm. My experience has been primarily, well, I should start by saying I've been in recovery from alcoholism and addiction for over 32 years, and in that context have taken meetings, recovery meetings, into prisons, mm-hmm. in this case in Northern California at the Brig on Treasure Island, which is the Naval, Marine, and Coast Guard
mm-hmm.
prison on Treasure Island in San Francisco Bay, and I took meetings in there. Here in Southern California, I've been working with Homeboy Industries and to a small degree with the Veterans Administration on mindfulness-based approaches to treating trauma of various kinds. So okay. that's my primary experience. So. Okay.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Can you give a brief definition of mindfulness meditation in your own words? What do you think, like, what is mindfulness meditation?
Mm-hmm. Well, mindfulness meditation, generally speaking, it's actually a physical practice. It's a yoga, a form of yoga that allows us to stabilize our bodies and to learn from and observe the way that our minds operate. It's a gradual process that, in my opinion, has to be developed over a period of time, often an extensive period of time. And so the way I practice it is we actually try and get the person to assume a comfortable, stable posture of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
It can, in the Buddhist tradition, it can be sitting, standing, walking, or lying down, any mm-hmm. of those.
Yeah.
With traumatized populations, it's often hard to get them to not fall asleep. Because very often the first reflex that a person has when they start to relax and they have had no other preparation is simply to go to sleep. Beyond that, trying to calm down and to be quiet and not fall asleep can sometimes be very painful or very difficult for people, particularly people who have been traumatized in various ways. I guess I should say that trauma includes, in the populations I work with, it includes family trauma, neighborhood trauma, school trauma, gang trauma, prison trauma, all of the above. And by trauma, I mean events that put a person under extreme stress. And that's experienced physically and psychologically. So mindfulness-based meditation is an opportunity for these people to find a way to understand their own trauma and then to find some relief through understanding.
Right.
So.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. What motivates you to work for this project? Like,
well, I'm a Buddhist. I identify with Buddhism. And so I believe very strongly that relieving the suffering of others. I mean, I should say I started by relieving my own suffering. That's when I started to do meditation. But I've been meditating for a very long time.
Right.
Over 50 years now.
And
so initially it was a way of relieving my own suffering. But as I've developed my understanding of my own psychic processes, I've seen that there's a possibility of being able to share that experience with others and be of help to them. And the fundamental Buddhist precept is to relieve the suffering of others. So that's why I do it.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Do you think teaching inmates about mindfulness meditation allowed the space for them to consider themselves as a part of human community? Because, like, normally they've been always tagged with something like, since they made a crime or whatever, so people always see them with that same eyes, but
they've been stigmatized.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been stigmatized by their whatever they've experienced in their life. And it depends on the individual. But yes, I mean, I think generally speaking, it can be a way for them to understand their common humanity, particularly when working with a teacher who's skillful in showing them their common, the common dimensions of what it is they've experienced, even very severe trauma.
Okay. What practice do you teach people inside the prison? Any particular one that you do, or you would?
Normally, it's what's called Vipassana or insight meditation.
Okay.
That's useful both with substance abusers or addicts, alcoholics, and also with people who are trying to understand the trauma that they've experienced. Mindfulness-based meditation teaches us to notice and observe how our body is reacting. And by our body, I mean our five senses. And in Buddhism, our sixth sense is consciousness. So we learn to observe and become familiar with how our body responds to just simply being in the world. And so that's an opportunity to actually gain greater and greater self-awareness and understanding. So,
okay. How do the, like, people you teach mindfulness meditation, like, do they continue practicing meditation after the course, or do you
some
think
do, some do, not all.
Why do you think that happens?
It's hard to know. Part of what I noticed is that older people tend to be more willing to accept the possibilities of doing it. They may value it more. For example, I've worked with people who've been in prison for a very, very long time, up to 40 years in the California State Prison System. And meditation for them, a lot of them began to do meditation inside the prison. And they find it as a source of, if you're in prison, facing all the stressors that are involved with prison work, with prison life, you can find a source of inner peace and inner calm, which serves you no matter what the circumstances are in your life, even in the worst prison circumstances. apparently, because I've not been in that situation, mm-hmm. but I understand that it can, even under the worst of circumstances, can give you a source of peace and of calm in the world. So those people who have had that serious experience in prison and then do meditation begin to see the possibilities of that. But it's a good question. I can't explain why some people mm-hmm. are actually able to do it and others don't. It's an interesting challenge.
Right. Okay. What benefits do you experience from teaching meditation?
I think I get some sense of usefulness, of just simply being useful, and of sometimes helping people mm-hmm. relieve their own suffering. Those are probably the primary things. So.
Okay. This is a conditioned question. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, a person says like they really want to meditate, but for them it's like very hard to meditate. Like, you know, even to sit in a place, like, you know, mm-hmm. or even to come to the yoga mat just to even mm-hmm. practice, mm-hmm. for them it's like hard. What suggestion will you advise them to get started?
Well, it's an interesting question. Not everyone can meditate. Mm-hmm. There are people, for example, I haven't had firsthand experience, but one of the leads down at the Homeboy Industries, Father Mark Torres, has had people confront him physically, like stand up during meditation and come over and stand right in front of him in a threatening way. Mm-hmm. Some people can't comfortably do it mm-hmm. because getting quiet, they depend a lot on dissociation as a way of diverting their attention, their emotional energy from what's so painful to them.
Right.
And meditation sometimes brings that up in a very strong way. So people begin to be aware
of that
pain. And when they experience it, that can be very, very difficult. So mm-hmm. not everyone can do it. And I don't know, I don't have experience with people who have not done it or been unable to do it and then eventually were able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I normally tell people to do is to try in very small increments.
Okay.
Just try it even for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Even if you do 2 or 3 minutes, if you can try and do that. And then use some form of focusing your mind on, like, breathing or maybe a simple mantra or something as simple as just saying peace,
mm-hmm.
repeating peace to yourself. There are a variety of... Bhikkhu Bodhi says there are, I think, over 100 different forms of meditation described in the Buddhist literature.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many different forms. So I try and be creative and thoughtful about the person I'm talking to. Like if they, for example, a color can be a form of meditation
mm.
or music of various kinds. For some people, focusing on a plant or a flower can be a powerful form of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try and be creative and experiment with the person and see if you can identify mm-hmm. ways that will make it easier for them to do the practice. So.
Okay. Do you think mindfulness meditation and practicing yoga can go hand in hand, or do you think any connection between this?
Yeah,
two?
I think meditation, at least in the Buddhist tradition, meditating, for example, seated meditation with your legs in mm-hmm. a full lotus, half lotus, or the Burmese posture, those are all forms of devotional yoga.
Okay.
And in fact, a seated meditator is making small adjustments all
mm-hmm.
the time
mm-hmm.
to find stability and keep their resilience and stability. So it's a form of yoga. And I think it's, particularly if you're trying to do extended sitting, like in the Buddhist tradition we talk about, in the Zen tradition we talk about sesshins, which can be up to 10 days normally, and in the Buddhist tradition we do retreats. The Vipassana tradition, we do retreats, and mixing yoga into that is a very helpful way, because most people, their bodies can't sit for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day and not have some cramping, some pain, and so forth. So mixing yoga into that, in my opinion, is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, thank you. Do you have any stories of inmate that you can share? How does he or she incorporates with mindfulness meditation in their daily life? Like,
you mean like a prisoner? You mean
like, or whoever, like you work in the homeboy industry?
Uh-huh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
If anybody have the story, like how
people do it in different ways, but normally what we try and do is we suggest that people, wherever their living situation is, that they begin early,
okay,
almost as soon as possible in the morning. with even 5 minutes. Many of the people we work with have families. They're living in complex living situations where there's a lot of distraction. But I often stress, try doing it in the morning when you're first waking up, even for 5 minutes if you can. But if you can do a little bit longer, that's great. They've actually found that women that do it in a detention center up in Seattle that do it for 10 minutes show measurable brain results. So 5 to 10 minutes to start with. And then during the day, I often recommend that people at least bookend their day. They begin and end with meditation. But even if you can find short period of time during the day, for example, obviously, people go into the toilets and they sit by themselves. They can sometimes meditate there quietly. That's one of the common ways that I suggest to people. I mean, it's often good that they can find privacy. I also personally recommend people go out into nature whenever possible, do walks in parks, or in quiet areas, gardens, places.
Like walking meditation.
Or even seated meditation in a garden.
Yeah.
Those are very, I suggest those very often too.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything like out of your experience you want to share about like teaching inside the homeboy industry? Like, is there any experience you want to share related to meditation program?
I think the hardest thing in our situation over there is getting people to come consistently week after week on a recurring basis, because it's like gaining any skill. It requires consistent practice. And if people don't come back on a regular basis, and some do, we have people at Homeboy Industries who have come for 4 or 5 or longer years or longer,
right?
And very often, as I said earlier, they're often the older people, and they may be the people that are in more senior management because they've seen the benefit that comes from mindfulness meditation. So that's the hardest part, is to get people to come on a regular basis and continue to participate. And also just simply to build trust. Because Homeboy Industries is, I don't think you've ever been down there.
But
they're mostly still Chicano people, Hispanic people, at least from South America, Central America. But also now Black people and some Asian people. But they've all been through very difficult lives, and it's hard for them to trust somebody like me. They see an old white guy walk in who's a professor. And it takes a while to build trust. And I do that by talking as honestly as I can be about my own experience, my own case, about talking about alcoholism and addictions, and letting them know that I have seriously struggled with those questions. And that usually helps to some significant degree. Because I don't know if you know this, but I think the data shows that 80% of the people in the California state prison system have either risky substance use behaviors or actual substance abuse. So substances are an important part of what happens in getting people into prison. And so identifying with that aspect of their lives sometimes gives me a little bit of a better opportunity to build trust and to communicate, you know. So.
All right. Okay. Any life learning that you think you take away while you're teaching inside the prison?
Well, Father Greg Boyle, who started the Homeboy Industries, says that sooner or later we all realize that kindness is the only strength there is, and that kindness is an extremely powerful force. He also talks a great deal about kinship, about not thinking reflexively in terms of them and us, and we divide up ourselves by different forms of identity very much, and by class values, by ethnic values, by, you know, heterosexual gender values, patriarchy. I mean, a whole variety of ways that we divide ourselves up and judge other people. And I think it's, you know, the whole practice at Homeboys helps me to counter a lot any of those tendencies that I find in myself.
As an outsider, what do you think, like, as an outsider, what kind of misconception we can have about the people, like, you know, whoever is in the prison or who just came out of the prison, like, you know, like, what misconception?
Well, mostly, in my experience, it's fear. People are frightened. We think that either people who have gotten into prison have actually done things that are frightening, and sometimes they have.
Okay.
I mean, some violence, various kinds. Or once they've been in prison, they've learned violence and they've been living in a violent environment. So to me, those are the factors that often interfere with my ability to, you know, I notice my own apprehension or fear. Also, my self-consciousness, as I said earlier, about trying to prove myself trustworthy to them, I think it's important to try and be as direct and honest about my own experience as I can be.
Mm-hmm.
So I try and do those things. So.
Okay, because, like, even I was taking another interview with the other guy. He said when he shared his experience, they feel more closer to him to
That's
be
right.
able to share.
That's what I was saying about building trust
yeah.
and about talking about
mm-hmm.
my experience with addictions, with alcoholism and drugs, you know, so.
But do you think, like, the person who doesn't have, like, you know, if they don't have such kind of story, do you think for prisoner it's hard to believe them or to have build that trust
well,
on them?
Well, I think the other thing to do then, and if it's not that particular issue,
uh-huh.
is to try and be emotionally honest.
Yeah.
Like, if you're struggling with issues, for example,
uh-huh.
one of the things we often do when we start a meditation is I just go around the room and have everyone check in.
Right.
Like, what are you doing today? How are
mm-hmm.
you feeling today at this
mm-hmm.
moment? Are you under stress for any reason? And when I do that, I also check in. So
mm-hmm.
I also just let them know what's going on in my life
mm-hmm.
that may be disturbing me or problem, you know, raising. I try and talk honestly about the problems that are giving me some sense of stress in my day. So that's what I would suggest for anyone who, not talking about drugs and alcohol, but talking about as honestly and as insightfully as you can about
yeah.
what are the stressors
mm-hmm.
in your life or in our lives today. So.
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you, dear.
Good luck.
Yeah. Can you give me a little bit of introduction about yourself, what you do, and how long you've been doing volunteer work in the prison project?
My name is Venerable Sumitha. I'm a Buddhist monk from Sri Lanka doing PhD here.
Mm-hmm.
I have been volunteering for the prison project for around 3-4 years.
Okay, thank you so much. What motivates you to work for the prison project?
Well, as a Buddhist monk, we always go to help others. So somebody asked me if I can join, so I said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I go there like once a month.
Okay. Do you think teaching inmates about mindfulness meditation allows space for them to consider themselves as a part of the human community? Like, because normally, since they make some kind of crime and all, like, people have a lot of judgment on them, right? So do you think when you teach the meditation, like, you know, it helps them to open up their mind, like, you know, to accept their self? Like, do you think that kind of benefits they can see and it helps them?
Of course, I think, you know, they... People do things, and but when we help them, they first of all they try to recognize themselves, and then they start correcting, fixing their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us don't have time to look into ourselves sometimes. Most of the time, in fact,
mm-hmm.
so. It really helps them, actually. So what we do is we try to help them to look into themselves. And so if you know yourself, there is a better chance for you to fix some things. I think in the prison, there is a special community there. These people already have been marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come out, they always have a lot of challenges. Even inside the prisons, they have many challenges.
Okay.
Some people don't necessarily want to involve in wrong things, but sometimes you are forced to
mm-hmm.
Do things. So we try to help them to
mm-hmm.
maintain that inner peace
mm-hmm.
and strong inside,
right.
So that they don't want to be a part of any gang activity or any drug
mm-hmm.
stuff. So even if they come out somehow, so we don't want them to go back to the prison. Most of the people, when they come out, they don't have any good atmosphere here outside the society here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't welcome them.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a job, they don't have any good friends, and they feel alone, kind of. They don't want to stay here, and they do something else and go back to the prison to see their friends. This is the tragedy. So we try to help them not to lose that inner peace, and once they come out, we want to help them to stay here, to motivate themselves, to inspire themselves, and do something so that they don't want to go back to the prison.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. As there are many different ways to practice mindfulness meditation, which practice do you use with the in the project, like, you know, when you go inside the project, like, they have body scanning, sitting meditation, like watching your breathing, walking meditation. Which one do you use in particular when you...
I think we teach all of them.
Okay.
We would like to start with the breathing meditation. And so we focus on breathing meditation, and then we also can shift to other meditations like loving-kindness meditation. And then we also have the sitting meditation, of course. And then standing, walking, even while working. Especially in the prison, when somebody meditates, that would be weird. Especially if you are in a community like that. So I even ask them to, while watching the TV, for example, just watch TV, but you are actually inside. You are meditating. So you pretend to be watching TV, but you are meditating. So you don't disturb. You don't get disturbed by others.
Right.
Others, sometimes people don't like others to meditate. You know? They might do something even harmful. You never know. So, like, by reading a book or something, you're not reading a book. You're really actually inside. You're meditating.
Oh, I see.
You're watching TV like that, but inside you're meditating. So others think you're watching TV, so you're fine. So we had to be creative and, do something so that they can... meditation is not only sitting, it's everything with mindfulness.
Like every work you
everything
do,
you
activity,
do with mindfulness. Be more alert, more aware of what you do. To live right here, right now, is meditation too.
Right. Okay. What are the misconceptions we might have about prison or prisoners, you know, as an outsider? Like the people who never been to prison, or the people who are outside, and when they see, like, you know, what do you think, what are the misconceptions we can have about?
First of all, they think these people are all bad. They are scared. Many people don't want to go there. They think, oh, how do you go there? That's not a place for you to go.
Right.
You know, you might be hurt by them or something. They don't know that they are also human beings.
Right.
Sometimes people outside are more, sometimes even worse than them. Some of the prisoners, I think they have been there due to some kind of a misunderstanding. Even maybe they haven't done anything wrong. You never know.
Yeah.
Because the legal system judge them to be so-called criminals, but they maybe they haven't done it. So maybe the lawyers have proved them. And some people actually have done because of out of sudden impulsion. They have done something. And so in the prison they really suffer, like they repent. Some even cry. They repent for the rest of their life. You never know. Sometimes they have done something which they never thought would lead them to prison like that. And now they suffer, they repent. They really miss their families. And they miss their friends. They miss their freedom. Now it's the cell. Sometimes, I remember first day I took some fresh flowers And they all wanted to smell that and touch that. Oh, is it a real flower or something? I really felt very touched by that because, you know, they also have emotions.
Right, definitely.
Yeah, people outside should really feel, I think, at least if you should not judge them because none of us is, I think, perfect.
Yeah.
We all do mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
We all do wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only when it comes to the legal framework
also,
that you have escaped, you know. But inside, you ask yourself, inside, how many things you have done that you would not have liked to do.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, I heard, like, some of your childhood trauma can lead you to such actions, you know. I mean, like, they don't want to do it, but they still get into it because of the traumatic events they've been through and all.
Maybe the social pressure, maybe the family pressures, maybe the marital relationship problem with that could have led to those things too. Your childhood memories or experiences you had, all those things could lead them to be living here today in the prison.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. What benefits do you experience from teaching meditation for yourself and for them? What do you think?
See, what we do is, when I go there, it's the whole day for me. I go volunteer.
Yeah.
I don't earn anything.
Mm-hmm.
We just go there, offer our service, and it's the whole day when I come back. I used to go, I remember the first many months, we can't eat anything. I had only water sometimes.
Inside?
The whole day.
Cannot eat inside?
No, we can't take anything. Only water. I think even water is restricted right now. I'm not sure that. But, yes. So, it's like 100 miles from here. So, back and forth with the traffic, you can imagine the time. So, most of the time, it was a very tiring day. But at the end of the day, I feel so good. It motivated me because I felt them, I saw them, seeing me and listening to me and asking like some questions from me. They felt so happy, you know. And I used to chant, bless them, and we would talk to them, Q&A sessions where we would listen to them patiently. And there were many, many benefits for them, definitely. But for ourselves, because we human beings, we also should do something. That's our moral duty, to take care of our fellow human beings, regardless of their, you know, all kinds of differences. Your class, your race, your religion, your culture, your language, doesn't really matter. As long as you help others.
Right.
I think all religions preach this thing. So, I do that wholeheartedly. I'm really very happy about that.
Okay, thank you. How do the prisoners respond to the mindfulness meditation? Do you think they continue the practicing meditation even after they are out of the prison? Or, like, you know, do you think they continue that path or they just don't do it?
See, it depends on some people. Most of the people in the prison, if they hear when the prison authority announces that the Buddhist chaplains are there, and nobody forces you, and you come, then if somebody comes, there is something. There is something in that person. They definitely want to learn. They want to practice. And they are very serious. In the cells even they practice. There are some people who are really interested in practicing more, learning more about meditation. So it's a different thing. I think in our society, maybe we force people, maybe you should come or something. Mm-hmm. In the class, for example, if everyone is there, so they can do that. Or it's different in the prison. Mm-hmm. If somebody goes there to meet a Buddhist chaplain,
mm-hmm.
There is something very serious about that. I noticed that they practice even mm-hmm. outside the prison
mm-hmm.
because they know the benefit.
Okay.
If you teach them the benefit, if you teach them the meditation when they practice, they know it is beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely practice it.
Right. Okay.
But having said that, there might be some people still, you mm-hmm. know, when they come out, they. After long years in the prison, if they come out, sometimes you see this freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It is so overwhelming, they get carried away too. You never know.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm sure those people who practice meditation, they see the benefit. And
mm-hmm.
This is also one thing we need to emphasize there,
mm-hmm.
because you go out after years in the prison, so mm-hmm. make sure you don't get carried away by these trends.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep your inner peace, try to maintain that, mm-hmm. and then you can sustain wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Inside or outside the prison, it's okay. Wherever you are, you should be stronger inside.
Right.
Then you can survive.
What are the goals and objectives of meditation class within the prisons? Like, what are the goals and objectives you have within the class?
As I said, I think it's to ease out their pressure.
Okay.
Because their anxiety, their depression, their anger, their hatred,
mm-hmm.
You know. And also, especially the suffering they have because they are here
mm-hmm.
in the prison. Even if they want to do something, they can't do that.
Right.
Their freedom is restricted to a greater extent.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to help them to ease out that pressure,
mm-hmm.
to live at the present moment. And by being stronger yourself, finding that inner peace, you don't feel embarrassed
mm-hmm.
anymore. So we try to strengthen them.
Right. Thank you. Do you have any stories of inmates that you can share? How does he or she incorporate? Yeah, in mindfulness meditation, their daily life. Yeah.
I remember. So one day, one prisoner was watching TV,
mm-hmm.
and he said somebody in the back was coughing at him.
Okay.
You know, he was a big guy.
Uh-huh.
So when somebody did like that, he looked and that guy was coughing at his face. So it was very infuriating. It's very irritating.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for a big guy or somebody in the prison, that would easily lead them to a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And also that might have extended their prison stay.
Oh.
Yeah, if you are involved in the prison, you know,
mm-hmm.
your punishment can be even
increased.
More serious. Yeah. So this guy immediately remembered my meditation. And then he didn't react to that, and then that guy did it again. So that was like inviting him to a trouble.
Uh-huh.
So he immediately recognized it, and he thought he should not stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So he went out of it, and then he went to his cell, and he started. Closed his eyes and he felt the whole body was burning.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like burning with fury and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started to calm down,
mm-hmm.
meditate, breathing, focusing, and then he felt so good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some more, like I think after couple of times or something, when I went there, somebody brought me a painting.
Painting, oh, yeah.
Yeah, Buddha's painting.
Mm.
A prisoner did a beautiful Buddha painting for me. I never expected that, and he gave it to me as a reward.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And then we can't take anything out.
Oh.
And also they get a very small salary. I think they get like 10 cents or something per hour.
Uh-huh.
So you can imagine, they also do work, like work study in the school.
Mm-hmm.
So they also work there, and the small salary they get. I was so surprised after a few days, I received that by post,
mail.
I was really, really surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And that... that was a really pleasant surprise to me.
Mm.
And then when we organized the Buddhist art exhibition at the University of the West,
mm-hmm.
and we got one Buddha statue made out of bread.
Wow.
One prisoner made a Buddha statue made out of bread. Beautifully carved and painted, and it's just so cool.
Mm.
It's a very unique one. And another one made another Buddha statue of soap, a piece of soap. These are some of the things I think I would remember forever.
Mm. Definitely.
Amazing.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think like about yoga? Like, do you think yoga and meditation go hand in hand?
I definitely agree. I feel it's really useful, because I have been doing that too,
mm-hmm.
in our temple. So for years I have been working with another friend of mine. So he would do the yoga part,
mm-hmm.
I would do the meditation. Yoga can physically help them to settle in their seats,
mm-hmm.
and their posture, and also many things. Physically very helpful,
mm-hmm.
and we don't do very strenuous yoga. It's
right.
like
just
easy basic breathing and some stretchings,
right?
And that eventually really helps the others to practice meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I myself found it's very useful.
What are some results you have seen after teaching meditations, and do you have any future goals?
Results from teaching meditation? I have already seen, as I shared with you already,
mm-hmm.
the prisoners have been benefited. They, some of them even wanted to become monks.
Wow.
I was really surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them wanted to say, like, they wanted to dedicate the rest of their life for Buddhism, to promote Buddhism,
mm.
because they found the unique strength they gained. So they wanted to do something like that. Even outside the society, when I teach meditation, a lot of people, they find it very useful for their own daily life.
Mm-hmm.
They notice that their aggressive nature has cut down. So they become more peaceful and more patient,
mm-hmm.
and some people also could get rid of some of the bad habits they
mm-hmm.
have,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's overall, there are so many benefits for them. As the goal, I think, of course, as a Buddhist monk, to get rid of all these sufferings.
Right, definitely.
To become an arahant,
mm-hmm.
may be my goal.
Definitely. Okay. Can you give a brief definition of mindfulness meditation in your own words? Like, what do you think personally for yourself? Like,
really meditation?
Mindfulness
meditation.
Yeah.
See, as I said, mindfulness meditation is to be mindful in whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
When you work, when you walk, when you talk, when you... even sleep,
mm-hmm.
you know, even when you take shower,
you
have to be mindful.
Mm-hmm.
That really helps you.
Right.
You observe your breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You observe your feelings.
Right.
You observe your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
That helps you so much. if we can do it all the time, you become actually enlightened.
Right, definitely.
It's so hard, it's so challenging, but you should do it in different atmospheres. For example, at the beginning, a lot of people, they can meditate when there is some other noise or distracting situations. So at the beginning, people want to practice alone or practice in a very silent place. But eventually, I recommend you learn this technique and go outside and apply. You talk to people. You have to mingle with the society.
Right.
You can get rid of the society. You can run away from the society. You go to all these places and test yourself.
Right.
How it is affecting you. And I have tried. I have tried even in the snow how to meditate. So I have tried even in very hot outside weather to meditate. And recently I even tried in the sea, ocean. By, you know, facing the sea, the waves. I was trying to focus on the wave patterns, sounds. And it's so much peaceful and amazing. Very wonderful. Yeah, so wherever you are, try to practice it. While driving, while cooking, while working, even while talking, you should practice it.
Right.
Yeah. And even when you are alone, you should be mindful.
Right.
Because some people are worried they are alone, nobody is there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you live with somebody, you always have problems.
Definitely.
You know, so it's always challenging whether you are alone or with somebody, whether you work or not, whether you're a monk or a layperson, it doesn't matter.
Right.
If you are mindful, it really can help you.
Mm-hmm.
When you are stronger inside,
right.
you can radiate that power, the energy to others. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate it. It was really good.